Heyo, back with you on the leader, Dieter Hurtenbach, hanging out until midnight, until Giants replay at midnight. Help us all. It's a Friday night, and we're going to take you right up into Saturday morning. Joining me now to talk a little bit of NBA, Bill Herendo, one of our great friends here on KMBR tonight. And we have one hell of an NBA Finals going on, Bill. Be honest with me. Did you see 2-2 coming when the Suns went up 2-0?
My gut, Dieter, said that Milwaukee would bounce. Of course, these are two well-balanced teams. And the Bucks, don't forget, were down 2-0 to Brooklyn. So I thought they would respond strongly at home. And before the playoffs started, I really liked Phoenix to win the whole thing. But as Monty Williams knows, it's not going to be easy.
It has been an incredible series. And I know a lot of folks, they're not deeply familiar with these teams for whatever reason. I guess Chris Paul and Giannis don't move the needle despite being two of the best to ever do it. But who's been the biggest surprise to you in this series? Obviously, you get Booker coming through, Chris Middleton. It could even be a negative surprise. I haven't liked what I've seen from Jrue Holiday. Who stood out to you in this series so far?
Well, I think you raise a good point, and this, I think, needs to be clarified, is that people are down on Holiday's offense. But you know what, Dieter? If he's not playing the defense he is in games 3 and 4, picking up Chris Paul in the full court, this series is not 2-2.
100%.
So it's very difficult, right? It's very difficult to hope that he's going to be terrific offensively as far as efficiency goes when he has done a great job defensively on Chris Paul. As far as the biggest surprises go, I mean, I guess, and you look at game two, it was just a terrific effort systemically by Phoenix. And you see Mikal Bridges going for 27 points, right? I mean, to me, to see him step up on a big stage is certainly a surprise, just that he's able to embrace the moment. But I can't really point to any other significant surprises either way. Again, following these teams throughout the season, this is kind of the effort that you'd expect on the biggest stage.
Well, game four had to be somewhat of a surprise in the sense that Chris Paul was turning the ball over so much. That's exactly not his thing. That's what he doesn't do. He's the operator of all operators. And for him to be turning the ball over like that, you have to think something's up with that wrist. Maybe it's just a one-off. I don't know. What did you make of his performance in game four?
A tremendous contrast from game one, right? We saw 32 points, 9 assists, and just 2 turnovers. And ironically here, 2 of those turnovers late were absolutely devastating.
Yes.
So deleterious to Phoenix. So I think it's very hard to tell. All players at this stage of the game are dinged up, are nicked up, and what have you from an injury standpoint. He's 36 years old. We talked about the smothering Holiday defense. But I do expect, just like I expected Booker to bounce back after an anemic performance in Game 3, he was massive in Game 4,
yes,
I do expect Chris Paul to bounce just with his savvy, moxie, overall leadership skills. And it's a real testament to the NBA where we can never get too high or too low. Each game takes on its own personality. It certainly will be a different energy and different vibe back in the desert.
Speaking of too high, too low, I want to get your thoughts on somewhat of a macro trend. And I want to highlight DeAndre Ayton, who, if anything, has been the biggest story of the playoffs for the Phoenix Suns. Yes, Booker has been incredible. We already knew he was this kind of scorer. Yes, Chris Paul has been himself and is now getting his chance to win a title. But the emergence of DeAndre Ayton not that long ago, during this regular season, there were plenty of folks down in Phoenix legitimately asking if they could win with that guy, if he was the right pick at number one overall, if a true center of his ilk could be an important piece on a championship team. And he's answered all of those questions, even if they don't win the title. What do you make of Ayton's performance, and more so what it might mean for big men in the NBA? Because it feels like this is the guy who can bring about a renaissance almost.
Right. And Peter, he's shooting in the high 60s during the playoffs and averaging 15 points and 12 rebounds. And you're right. I tweeted about this. I did a quick monologue on, the big men in the NBA during the season and how the rumors of their demise were highly exaggerated, right? Mark Twain. We have Jokic, who, of course, won the MVP. And Ayton, to me, is just a great textbook example of skill development. Also, Chris Paul responding to his leadership, Monty Williams, Mark Bryant. a great player at Seton Hall and an assistant coach at Phoenix who's done a terrific job at bringing Ayton along. And it's just a testament to keeping it simple. What does he do? He protects the rim. Mm-hmm. He's in help defense. He rebounds. He rim runs. He screens and attacks the rim. He does it so well. One of the things to look for in Game 5, if they can free Chris Paul from Holiday in the backcourt, Phoenix wants to get into their offense around 20 seconds on the shot clock. Mm-hmm. And also, if he is not abated by Holiday, you know what, Dita? They could set those screens in a better position for Ayton to roll to the rim, as opposed to the great block by Giannis, where that was a great block, and that was one attempt at the rim. Frequently, the pressure defensively in the backcourt is causing that pick and roll to be too high for Ayton to be a threat at the rim. But just great, tremendous skill development, and a credit to Ayton to stay with it and to hone his skills.
I know Chris Middleton has been an all-star now a couple of times, and he's obviously been an incredibly important player for the Bucks in seasons prior to this one, but how is this guy still being underrated? He is just as cool and calm and collected as elite a shot maker as there is in the NBA, and yet it doesn't feel like he's even getting love after that incredible performance in Game 4, much less for the entire season and seasons preceding it. What do you make of Middleton's place in the hierarchy of scorers in the NBA? And the, I don't know, I don't want to go as far as say disrespect, but certainly underratedness that he carries.
Right. Well, you know, 40 points in Game 4, you're absolutely right, Dieter. And also, you know, remember, he scored 10 of the Bucks' final 12 points. And he's just a closer. And he, with Giannis in that two-man game, were absolutely tremendous at home in Milwaukee. You know, that scenario where they have that little pick-and-roll scenario going on in the short corner, arguably one of the toughest sets to cover in the league. Yes. I think part of it is just, you know, a little bit of Milwaukee being a middle-market team. And he's such a terrific, consistent player that sometimes he just doesn't get, you're right, the hype. But you know where he gets the hype? Where it matters most. Mm-hmm. On the opposition's whiteboard, the respect that he commands from the opposition. So I think he'd agree that he would rather earn it there than get it on social media or elsewhere. But he is a terrific talent and an absolute closer, which he demonstrated, of course, in Game 3, meeting everyone of Hubie Brown's criteria there. He wants the shot, can make the shot, can create if there's nothing, can get to the free throw line, makes his free throws, and, of course, he can get out of trouble as well.
Absolutely fantastic stuff. We're talking to Bill Herenda, great NBA analyst, talks to us all the time here on KMBR tonight, and I want to get your thoughts on Team USA. It has been a down and then up, and who the heck knows where they're at right now. Camp for them in Las Vegas. When you watch them, what kind of team are you seeing?
Well, I think it's a scenario where we have to take a step back, and the aforementioned Hubie Brown, the late Chuck Daly, Dr. Jack Ramsey, and the late Chuck Daly. Those guys went around the world, Dieter, as you know, with coaching clinics and educated the world on basketball. And now, you know, roughly 25% of the league is global. So many of the teams that they're playing against have more familiarity, have played with one another for longer than this group has. And I just think it's a good wake-up call that demonstrates that it's not going to be easy to win gold in the Olympics. And again, I think they're going to be fine. Not that it's going to be easy, but I think that this is just part of the process, and it is kind of a wake-up call that the world has certainly caught up. And, you know, on paper, the U.S. should win it. You could argue that they have the most talent. But, again, it's chemistry. And as Steve Clifford, the former coach of the Orlando Magic, says, you know, chemistry doesn't happen by accident. Mm. So now we see them adding JaVale McGee. So I think what you want here is good balance on this roster. And of course, Bay Area fans are familiar with McGee, his ability to rim run, basket protect, et cetera. So I think it's just – this is 2021 now. It's not – you know, 1985 or 92.
Who would you say is the biggest threat to the U.S. other than themselves and getting in their own way? What country should scare the United States in the tournament?
Well, probably Australia would be a team that you would certainly be concerned with. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really more about us than the opposition at this standpoint, that, you know, you want to get your ship right And it's kind of a Jeff Van Gundy. It's not about who you're playing. It's about how you're playing. Mm. But Australia is definitely a team to me that kind of jumps to the forefront with Joe Ingles and other, you know, NBA players as well.
Speaking of an Australian, Ben Simmons, his name has been tossed around ad nauseum on the rumor mill. What do you make of all of this smoke? We know that Daryl Morey is at least looking to move him. He's interested in having conversations about moving him. Do you think he does move him? And where do you think a nice landing spot would be if they do?
I don't think they do, Dieter, but I would say, for example, if you looked at Portland, mm-hmm. Now what's going to happen with Damian Lillard, right? Is he going to demand a trade? There are stories out there that he is. He said he's not, you know, he's not yet. He's, you know, kind of, you know, demurred at this point that wasn't, you know, his demand at this juncture. But I think a lot can happen there. Now, you know, could a McCollum for Simmons trade make sense? For example, if they're going to shape things up in the Pacific Northwest, that could be a potential landing spot and a potential scenario that I could see. But I think here what you have is, obviously, there are mechanics involved, but much of this is from a mental standpoint, being more aggressive, having more shot opportunities. And a change of scenery was terrific. For example, Markelle Fultz,
right,
who was great for Clifford in Orlando, getting out of Philadelphia. Now, that is an example, and of course, you know, he had the devastating injury, but he was playing great before that happened. But I just think when you have a talent like that, like Simmons, can guard 1-5, and I think that they can, you know, with the proper skill development, I think they can bring him along offensively. But listen, no trade, no player is untradeable, and nothing in the league surprises any of us any longer.
When you think about Simmons, obviously the big question and kind of the thing that separates him from being the absolute one of the alphas of all the alphas in the NBA is the ability to shoot. You know, more people I talk to about, you know, prospective trade for Ben Simmons, and in my case, as it pertains to the Golden State Warriors, the more people that I hear from who say it's over. The shot's not coming around. This is what he is, and that's still an exceptional player. But if he can't make a shot, it's going to be a problem. Are you in that camp? Do you think that the shot can be redeemed? Again, admitting that even if he doesn't have that shot, he's really a tremendous talent?
Yeah, I'm an optimist, always an optimist, and never putting a ceiling on what a player can accomplish. So, you know, when you look at it, you know, he's listed at 6'11", right? 240. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, guys like Magic Johnson, Jason Kidd, were not terrific shooters when they entered the league and worked on it and got better. And I still believe that that can occur. So I would say that I do believe that he is a unique talent. He's already a three-time All-Star, all those accolades. But that, as you know, that means nothing. You know, right. You want to see production here in the playoffs when it means most. He's 24 years old. He's going to be 25 in a couple of days. Now on Tuesday, to be specific. So that's what you want to see is him thrive in the postseason. That's what he's going to be measured upon. And I think that there's still time, even though he's 25, to turn that around. I really do.
Warriors have picks number 7 and 14. At least they have them right now. Plenty of reports out there saying that their number one plan is to trade for a youngish starter, whatever the heck that means, and whoever the heck that might be. I'm all ears on who that might be. If somebody from the Golden State Warriors or around the NBA wants to let me know who is available and can be had at 7-14, it'd be great. That'd be fantastic. As of right now, I'm imagining that they're drafting at 7-14. I don't need you to go deep into the crystal ball here, but if you're in that range with your understanding of the collegiate basketball landscape and also understanding the Warriors' needs at this present day and time and in the future as well, who are you circling? Who are the guys that you think can help that team at 7-14? And again, you don't have to get it right on. We don't have to do a full mock draft here. I'm just looking for some guys who might be in that range.
So, Dieter, first off, that there are four ways to improve in the NBA, right?
Yep.
There's the draft, trade, skill development, and free agency.
Yes, sir.
Now, I would certainly be looking and listening to any potential offers that are on the table or that can be had. Mm-hmm. Because if you look at it, Curry is 33.
Yes.
Klay is 31. Draymond is 31. Now, if Lillard is available and he's 30 years old, one of the best players, of course, in the NBA. He's a prolific closer and finisher. Mm-hmm. You've got to think that that window of opportunity is rather short. You know, we're talking about a couple of years.
No question.
So I wouldn't be surprised if they do pull the trigger and, you know, make some moves. Now, having said that, you know, Jokic was picked 41st, Giannis 15th.
Right.
12 teams went passed on Booker. Kawhi went 15th. So even though people believe that, okay, well, it's Cunningham, Green, Mobley, Suggs, and Kuminga, top-heavy draft, and, you know, you can juggle that order or not, I still think that the Warriors have an opportunity here to get a player, players, that can help. But also, I think they've got to look hard and fast at the ability to upgrade their roster by trading the picks. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's Wiseman, Wiggins, and Oubre in the mix as well.
With Oubre, is there a team out there that seems to be a nice fit? Because it does seem like in his latest little media tour, he's very much laying the groundwork for an exit out of Golden State, that he's not all that interested in coming back, as he wouldn't have a guaranteed starter's job, at least once Klay Thompson comes back. Is there a team out there that you think could use a guy like a Kelly Oubre?
Sure. I mean, you know, you would think New York, number one, just a team that could use some offensive punch and, you know, to solidify their perimeter game. Could Toronto use Kelly Oubre as well, Dieter? And we've heard, you know, Pascal Siakam potentially to the Warriors. Is he involved there, right, in some type of deal as well? So, I think that there's certainly a market for Kelly Oubre with multiple teams throughout the league. And that's just, you know, a few that come to mind and a few that, may have assets that are attractive to Golden State. And then also, you know, if you're talking about Portland and Lillard and a potential deal there, of course, you know, that could be a fit as well.
Who wins the NBA Finals, Bill?
Suns in seven in the desert.
Oh,
83% of teams at home in Game 7 have won it, Dieter. That's what I'm doing. That's where I'm going. How about you?
I still have Bucks in six, and it was feeling not so awesome when they went down 2-0. But I feel like something clicked in, and what Giannis has done in the last couple of games, I don't know if it's stoppable. And we'll see what's going on with Chris Paul's wrist injury, but I'm so happy that it is an exceptional finals, and it just it brings you in the first quarter and it holds you until the fourth. That's all you could ask for at a time like this. That's basketball at its finest between two absolutely fantastic teams that play an aesthetically pleasing brand of basketball. I mean, what more could you ask for? This is heaven for us, right?
Absolutely. In Milwaukee, last two games that they won, Dieter, 30 offensive rebounds, 39-9 second chance points advantage.
Wow.
So if they control the glass like that, of course, Hubie Brown says the cardinal rule of playoff basketball, can you control your defensive board? If Phoenix can't do that, Milwaukee continues to capitalize, you may be correct, my friend.
Fantastic insight from Bill Herenda, as always. Thank you so much, my friend, for joining us here on KMBR tonight. Let's not wait too long before we do it again.
Sounds great, dude. Anytime. My pleasure.
The tremendous and insightful Bill Herenda, ladies and gentlemen. Love Bill. Always just a great time. Listen, I'm a pessimist. Bill's an optimist. And it's nice to find somewhere in the middle where we can meet, and that is a love of basketball. And again, if you haven't gotten engaged yet in these NBA Finals, I highly recommend it. It is good, just good, deep down, good stuff. I don't really know how to explain it beyond that. We're not having to watch this James Harden nonsense. You're not having to watch bully ball. This is two teams that, again, I'll repeat myself, play an aesthetically pleasing brand of basketball. They're going full bore. There's a little bit of flopping. I won't lie about that. There's a smidge bit of flopping, but it's been really, really fun and entertaining for a casual fan like me. Not that I'm treating it casually, just that I don't have a dog in the fight outside of Bucks and Six ticket that I hold. It's been great, and it's a best of three series now. So get in while the getting's good. We'll have some more fantastic stuff for you just after this break. Kurtenbach is in for Willard here on The Sports Leader.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival. featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draftaccess to register for free entry today.